So where are you coming from, Dressel?
I had to have a meeting with a friend who's only in LA for a day, or in New York for a day.
In New York for a day.
Yep.
And was this a business meeting?
She's in the business, but no. Well, if, I don't know. Look, if, that's a good question.
If someone's in the business and you're meeting, it's always a business meeting.
Yeah, I guess I could justify writing it off.
Mm, justification. Now that's a long form conversation. Recorded at UCB Comedy Studios in New York City. This is the Long Form Conversations Podcast with your hosts, Sean Diston and Nicole Dressbell. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the show. This is, Achilles is already laughing. This is the UCB Long Form Conversation Podcast. My name's Sean Diston, and as always, I'm here with my co-host, Nicole Dressbell. Hello.
Hi.
Hi, and also to acknowledge Ben, been helping us out. Ben, he's tacking, he's doing a good job. Ben, you doing good over there? Thumbs up? All right, that's a thumbs up. Ladies and gentlemen, let's dive right into it because we have so much to talk about.
So much.
When I talk about a jam-packed episode, people who would fill an episode to its brim with information.
Ooh, baby.
I think Achilles Stamatolaki.
Locky. You had it right the first time.
I was so close. All right. Locky, like Locky.
Stamatolaki.
Stamatolaki. Ladies and gentlemen, Achilles Stamatolaki, famed teacher, amazing improviser, former associate artistic director at the UCB. Achilles, how are you?
I'm good. I'm ready to talk about myself and jab some names.
You did the show before, right?
Yeah, I did it, the original incarnation of this podcast.
Right.
But we only talked about Pattern Game.
Right.
Just the Pattern Game. Nothing about me.
Okay, so today we're going to do a little talk about Achilles, and then we're going to get right into Invocation, because that's why you're here.
God, I knew it. I knew there would be a catch.
No, I'm only kidding. We should jump right into it. So, Nicole, how do we start all these interviews?
Hey, Achilles, before you started taking classes at UCB, who were you? Where were you?
And what were you doing?
Please keep, every time you guys do this podcast, do that at the same time, the last line.
It's happened a couple times, though.
I'll start from, I was born in the Philippines.
Right.
Lived there till I was 8. Moved to New York when I was 8 with my family. I grew up in Stuyvesant Town. And then when I started taking classes at UCB, I'd been kind of out of college for a little bit. Like, my parents ran out of money, so like I stopped going to college. I went to Fordham for a semester. Mm-hmm. So I was kind of like just figuring things out, you know, like because I was like, well, I'm not going to school. Like, what do I need to do? So for a while, what I was doing was for a good like year plus, I would just go to libraries and go see movies. That's what I would do. Like, that's how I would spend my days. And then,
so you were still like having an education.
That was my rationale. I was like, if I'm not going to be in school, then I'll just like educate myself.
When you were in school, did you have were you focused on trying to do something in the comedy world or writing?
No,
or?
Not at all. No. I mean, my high school was an all boys Jesuit high school, in New York. So it was very academically focused.
Right.
So like when I stopped going to college, I was like, it was devastating.
Right.
So I was like, well, what do I do with
there?
My life?
Right. So you went to the library, you saw movies. Yeah.
So I drifted for a good like year and a half, mm-hmm. and then a friend recommended, like, he had seen a show at UCB, and it was like, you should go see this. I think you would like it. They took a suggestion, Super Furry Monkeys, and they made a whole show out of it. It was really funny.
Who was it?
Which friend?
No, who would have been the team?
Oh,
who'd you see?
I feel like it would have been Police Chief Rumble
at
that time. So it was probably a Harold Knight. So I, you know, my friend recommended me this place called the UCB Theater, the Upright Citizens Brigade, and I'd heard about them, obviously, from their TV show, but I didn't realize that they had a theater. Kind of kept that in the back of my mind for, like, a year and didn't go. And then on my 21st birthday, August 15th, 1983, on my 21st birthday, I saw Ass Cat. That was like the first show I saw.
Right.
And after kind of like not knowing what I should do, I saw Ass Cat, was so blown away by it.
Yeah.
As like, I feel like most people are.
Yeah.
Because I was expecting, you know, when you go see a show at like some random place, which is, you know, UCB
right.
was just above random.
It's not like Broadway. It's not something that's
exactly.
like, this is established, going to be great. You're like, this is some
yeah,
random
I was expecting
thing.
It to be like, yeah, whose lines is it anyway?
Some other, or even like some other fringe theater in New York that's
yeah.
like doing some weird shit.
I didn't expect, what I expected was like, oh, this is going to be a bunch of people I don't know. My friends and I purposely sat in like 3 or 4 rows back
right.
so we wouldn't get called on and have to, you know, participate in the audience. And then it was like Amy and Ian and like all these people I'd seen on Conan and
is this
all
22nd
over the place.
Street Theater?
No, this was 26.
26, okay.
Yeah. I think Chris Kattan told monologues that night. And then after that, I was like, this is amazing. The energy of this place is like so awesome. And I just like kept going to the show
right,
every
you
single
kept
week.
Shows,
yeah.
Right.
And that became my show for a while. And eventually I started taking classes, but that's how I kind of got into UCB. It was just like drifting
yeah.
and then got into it.
Yeah, it's a similar story, I think, sometimes. But Ass Cat's one of those shows. We talked about it with, I think Mudon was the last episode mm-hmm. that came out. She saw Ass Cat for the first time and was
yeah.
blown away. So you said you see shows from, what is it, months after that? Or how long did it take
yeah,
you
I
to
would
get
only
into a
see,
class?
I would only see Ass Cat. So that was August 15th. My first class wasn't until January. Part of it was I was saving up money.
Right.
I think I was working at like Dunkin' Donuts at that point. And I worked at Dunkin' Donuts for a while.
Wow.
for way too long. So I was saving up money. And I signed up for a class, I think at the end of November, beginning of December, for a January class. And it was one of those things where I literally went to the office at UCB, or I saw online that they had a class open, paid in person.
Right.
And then, you know, because back then classes didn't sell out super
quick. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So let's jump into classes, right?
Yeah.
So were you a person that, like, was into comedy? Like, do you think you came into it? Like, what was your initial feeling going into it? Were you getting it right away? Were you funny right away? Was it really hard?
I was interested in comedy, but it was never a thing that I was like, oh, this is the thing I really want to do.
Mm-hmm.
everything was, like, based on Ass Cat to me.
Right.
I was just like, I want to be able to do that. I want to be able to make be funny on the spot. And do that type of stuff. And I think this is true of 101 students, but especially of me, is like you just ape the things you see in a show,
yeah.
you know? And Ass Cat is like the worst thing to like emulate
sure
because...
Is.
And was it even back then?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it was like... Because...
I mean, bad in the way that like you shouldn't be doing those things if you're trying to
yeah.
learn how to do it.
Yeah, it's
right.
like celebrities show up 5 minutes beforehand and fuck around on
yeah.
stage for an hour. That's
yeah.
the worst thing for a student to watch.
Right.
And, you know, my 101 teacher, James Eason, basically said as much. He was like, Ass Cat is fun, but go see Harold Knight.
Yeah.
And this was maybe like a month into class where I'd only seen Ass Cat as the one show
right.
For me. And then Harold Knight. I started going to Harold Knight after he said that. And that's kind of when I started to get a sense of like, oh, there's a larger thing
here.
Yeah.
So you had like unless this is legend, you had like a seat in the theater that was like the Achilles
right,
seat.
There was
yes.
an Achilles
right?
seat.
And this is
right to the left of the center pillar, front row.
Yes. So the way this was kind of established was because of Ass Cat and Harold Knight, I'd always be the first in line. So Ass Cat line people. If you're listening to this, like, shout out to you.
Tarpies
right.
Now, right?
Tarpies.
Or I guess it's a specific group
if they have
of Ass Cat line
yeah.
people. Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
It's yes.
So it would be, so Ass Cat would be there first in line. It'd be there hours before. And, you know, I'd be, like, there by myself. Usually once in a while I'd take friends, but, like, usually I'd be there
it's
by myself.
It's easier to just go by yourself and convince
yeah.
yourself that it's okay to wait for 3 hours.
Oh,
yeah.
yeah. Often I'd wait much longer than
much
that.
Longer, yeah, yeah.
In
yeah.
fact,
did you
like,
need to? Like, when was the second person showing up?
Actually, like, there was a little bit of a competition
yeah.
between me and, like,
a
this,
few other people.
Yeah, this group of students from Manhattan College who are also like hardcore ASCAP people. I think Scotland's was one of them, where like we would kind of see who would get there first. And then if they had a giant group, they would just let me go in front. And like, but yeah, so like I was able to kind of have, since I was first in line for everything, I would sit in the same seat as I always did for ASCAT and Herald Knight.
Was part of that kind of the like losing that academia and then, you know, like the same reason you're like, I went to the library, I went to see movies. It was like, well, now you're replacing that with like going to see shows in a way?
A little bit. I think I think just the bigger part of it is just like having a little bit of like OCD and you know, wanting to have a little bit of like, I like this seat. This is the seat I'm going to sit in. I'm going to do that, you know? And when, anytime somebody else sat on that seat, I'd be like, can't enjoy the show. This is so awful. And that seat used to be, but now it's like an actual chair.
Right.
Before it was like a crate with a cushion on top. This was pre
new
seat
chairs,
replacement. Right. Yeah. So it was like those old, dirty seats with a crate on it. Yeah.
So you're going through classes,
mm-hmm.
101, 201, 301. Who were some people you studied with? And
teachers?
Yeah.
My 101 teacher was James Eason. Mm-hmm. He was a member of the group Mother, legendary group Mother. Actually, most of the people I ended up taking class with after that, at least for the core levels, were people I'd seen at ASCAT and really thought were
great.
You know? And it was one of those things, too, where you could kind of pick and choose
because it wasn't as in demand as it is
exactly
now. Right.
So this was like 2005. So my 201 teacher was Seth Morris. My 301 teacher was Peter Gwynn.
Those are some good ones.
My 401 teacher was Brian Husky.
Ooh, great.
And I took them back to back, pretty much. Like
once you started, you're like, this is what I'm doing. I'm gonna keep doing this.
My goal was, at least when I started 101, was like, I just want to be able to do what they
ASCAT,
do at ASCAT.
Right.
And then when I started seeing Herald Knight, and then definitely by 201, I was like, oh, I think I want to be on a team at the theater because I, you know, when I started 101, I didn't know that was a thing.
That was even a thing.
And my goal wasn't to be like, I'm gonna do UCB, get into comedy, blah blah blah. Like that's wasn't my goal at all. It was just be good at improv, and then like, oh, there's a thing that is like a tangible goal that you can shoot for. You know, once I started doing that, it was like, okay, that's what I want to try to shoot for, is be on a house team.
We're getting ahead of ourselves, but I do want to ask it now. Once you got that, once you had that tangible goal, is that when then career goals followed? Or when did you become somebody who was career-oriented, not just house team-oriented?
Yeah, I think, yes.
I think I could tell you when that was.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was when you were doing a ton of improv and you were on good teams. I think you started like a writer's group at the old training center.
Oh, telling me when.
I'm telling you when it was for you. Because I'm remembering there was like,
I thought John was going to do it for himself.
No, I knew 100% what was happening. Right? I was like, this is an interesting choice, Sean.
Because I think at the time, I think when I first met you, you were like, maybe even still interning at ASCAT. And, or maybe had been done with that. But you were such an improv guy, and then all of a sudden I was like, Achilles is doing these like writers things every week. Mm-hmm. I was like, that's crazy.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I definitely made a conscious effort at a certain point to not just do improv.
Because
like improv, you know, you get on a house team. Maybe there's the next level of like getting on a weekend team or something, or maybe like doing acting stuff. But to me, acting wasn't really a thing. I mean, I'll do commercials or whatever. Like, I'll go out for stuff.
Anyone listening, he'll do commercials.
Yeah, I'll do commercials. Please call my agent. No, I'll do that type of stuff, but it's not something I want to pursue. The thing I want to pursue is like writing stuff and creating comedy. And there was definitely a conscious choice of like, I'm going to start doing that. And it was, you know, I didn't start taking my first sketch class till after I'd been on a Herald team for 2 years. Just because I was like so focused on improv. But yeah, when I started writing, I was like, okay, this is the thing that I can start doing to get into an actual job.
So,
in comedy.
What made you take that first sketch class?
I think it was a big part of it was like, I've been doing improv for a while. I'm on a house team. Let me see what this is about, you know? And yeah, that was another thing that was like, I took it back to back, you know, 101 and 201. And yeah, I just wanted to kind of start writing. And also, like, and this is true of me now, if I don't have a deadline, I'm not going to write anything.
Right.
And that having a class gives you that deadline.
Right.
You know?
Right. So to just backtrack just slightly, you go through classes. Do you think you're getting it at these points?
Yeah.
Are you frustrated? Are there in your head moments?
Yeah. I mean, anytime you go through the classes, you're going to have these kind of peaks and valleys.
Right.
One I definitely remember was like after 401 or around that time, there were like, you know, these two, maybe it was even after my first 501, but it was like after these two, there were these two, like, we called them 600s back then,
right,
that were like, you had to apply for. I didn't get in them.
Right.
And I was just like feeling just terrible about like not having fun and stuff. And you kind of just like work it out and push through. But yeah, like there are definitely peaks and valleys. But I thought like I was getting it intellectually, you know? I thought I was getting what this was all about.
When did Kid Durvin happen and all that?
Kid Durvin started in 2001.
That's your first
Seth
indie
Morris.
Team?
Yes. Kid Durvin was my first indie team. Really my only indie team, actually. Like we would rehearse. We had a class in 201. Our class was 12 to 3 on Saturdays. And then after class, we'd rehearse 4 to 7. So we have like a whole day of improv. And our coach was Charlie Sanders, who was great. I think we had Joe Wengert for a while before him. But yeah, that started in 201 and just kept going until, you know.
So you're one
later
of the
on.
Any names to drop in that?
Name drop, Chelsea Clark was in that.
Heard of her.
Beth Newell, who runs Reductress, is in that. Brendan McMullen, Steve Dressler, Scott Bullock, Emily Askin, who else? Eric Jansen. Those are the guys.
Cool. Yeah. Did you have contemporary? What was the indie scene like at that point?
So I think Kid Durvin was definitely one of like the bigger groups. I feel like it was us, Big Tobacco. There's a group called Axel Rex. That like Greg Tugulescu and like Oscar was in. Bombardo started out up a little after us. So it was, I think we were. We became an indie team just when there was kind of like this renewed rebirth in the indie scene.
I think Kevin was talking about that same rebirth of the indie scene. And I think when he was just talking about the indie shows, I think, yeah, that was a specific time where Big Tobacco and those guys.
Yeah. Do you want to set the record straight about something?
Yes. So Kevin Hines in the first episode of this podcast mentioned that a team left a show in the middle of it was a Five Dudes in Primal Bias show, and that was my group, Kid Durvin, that left in the middle
and apparently got an email from
Chris
Stafford.
Got an email waking up. So the what happened was is a complete misunderstanding. So Five Dudes Primal Bias, Kid Durvin opened for them. Two of our guys, Steve Dressler and Brendan McMullen, were in the midnight show at UCB Chelsea, right.
which was
UCBW. It was the first UCBW show.
Oh wow!
So like, for a long time, Cage Match was not a wrestling show, or there wasn't any comedy wrestling.
Right.
It was like, you know, Kevin Mullaney hosted it, and then Charlie Todd, Chris Kula, and Eric Scott hosted it just as themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And then they had this, you know, that
character
year they
stuff,
did
yeah.
character stuff, and they
did a midnight. Show.
Yeah, they did a midnight show. That was the first UCBW show. Steve and Brendan were in it. So we did our set, watched Five Dudes, and then left to support our teammates. But it absolutely looked like we were like, well, we don't need to see this other group, you know?
Yeah, you know, it still doesn't feel like a misunderstanding to me. It just feels like you guys left. But, I mean, maybe don't agree to do a show if you've got a midnight show.
That's true.
I think that's what gathered it, you know.
That's true.
It's a tough one, but
I wish I I probably still have that email.
I mean, of course you do.
I probably have it like framed. But so yeah, Gethard emailed us like early in the morning and we were like, you know, we were at that point, you know, maybe 301, 401 students and we're just so terrified that like, oh my God, we can never perform. And we sent all of them like apology emails.
I have a specific question here that relates to kind of where we are in this Achilles story. We have from Jason Duell, says, how does the community feel different now? Yeah, Duell. How does the community feel different now than when you started? So you're talking about like doing this show, Five Dudes is there. Were there close relationships with the generation above you? Did it feel a lot smaller? Because you've probably seen a ton of growth.
Yeah, I'd say in terms of the community felt smaller, but the gaps between performer and student felt much wider.
Right.
I think over the years that's lessened to the point where like it's not even a thing anymore. Right. I think part of that is like second stage, more opportunities to perform. The
probably
school is bigger.
Getting better at teaching and stuff.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's another one. The jam, I think, is a huge thing.
So there was no kind of open jam?
No, there would be like, you know, you'd have like a monthly jam maybe. And you might have the lottery, maybe, but that wasn't a regular thing.
Got it.
But I think the jam is a big part of, and that's only in like the past 3 or 4 years too, but I think that's a big difference is just performers and students. There's like less of a
divide.
Right? Yeah. Like people can just mix and, you know, do each other's shows more.
That's probably a good thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I really have no idea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's jump ahead to getting on your first team, right? What was that like? Had you auditioned a bunch? Like, I don't think I know this story. What exactly was that?
So the first time I auditioned was April 2006. So this is when they made Tantrum. And this was also around the time when, like, you know, I had one of those improv slumps and ruts.
Not feeling great, right?
Yeah. Didn't get a call back.
Did you kind of feel like you were on the radar at that time? Like, I think I'm doing good enough that I could be on it.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know if I'm in the necessarily like in the radar in terms of a Herald team, but I'm like people know me in the community, right? Like, for sure.
Were you interning at that point?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, that's a big one. And you interned at ASCAT, which is a
I interned at ASCAT for like 2 years.
Yeah. You
was that your first and only? Did you start?
I only ever interned at ASCAT.
That's a big deal.
Yeah.
Me too. Same thing.
Wow. It was great. Big deals.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of took, you know, being Achilles kind of came up the same way. But whatever. So anyway.
So yeah, that was the first time I auditioned, and from that, didn't get a call back. It was kind of like felt bad about it, but also in retrospect, it was like it was my first audition, and I can't expect.
It's always so crazy. Yeah. You're going to get on in your first audition. Those people that do, it's so, you don't
understand. It's hard. You really need to be good. Yeah. Chelsea Clark got on her first audition.
Well,
And
that also is part of the reason it sucks, because it's like these are the people I come up with. And
I mean, she was always the best in like all of our classes and in our group, to the point where the Five Dudes did a show called Chelsea Boys, where it was her and the Five Dudes, Chris Gethard, Bobby, Eugene, Charlie, and Zach, did a show with Five Dudes and Chelsea for like 20 minutes at a school night or something, because they just wanted to perform with her.
Oh, that's
wow.
You should get her on here and like have her talk to you about
that. I think we shall.
But yeah, so that was 2006, April 2006, didn't get on. And then the next auditions weren't till January 2007. So at that point, I'd like take in, you know, all the teachers that you had kind of needed to take in order to get noticed. You know, Delaney, Billy, Anthony, Gethard, all these guys. And January 2007 audition, I do get a call back, but don't get on a team. But the big difference was like I felt really good about both of my auditions. I was like, that's fine. Like, I felt really good about it. It's like, if it's going to happen, it happens, whatever. I do remember, like, walking into the theater after callbacks. Gethard was there. It was during a Herald night. And he just kind of, like, looking at me and being like, cool. Like, I'm nodding my head. But it was, like, it was a look of, like, good job, man, but not quite.
Not going to happen.
You know? Not quite this year. But I, you know, felt really good about my audition, Should I just drop some names about who was in that
sure,
audition?
Yeah. Sure, of course.
The committee at the first committee was like, the first time I auditioned, was the people in the room were Anthony King, who's the AD, Zach Woods, and Gethard.
Just the three of them?
Just the three of them.
Interesting.
Well, that was the first time I auditioned. Right. So that was
that's
the open
2006.
Call.
2006.
Yeah.
Right.
Second time it was Joe Wengert, Anthony, and Lennon Parham.
Ooh.
And then in my callback for that year is Anthony, Billy, Shannon, Gethard, and Delaney.
That room terrifying room.
It's a terrifying room. To the point where the funniest thing that happened in my callback audition was Delaney falling back on his chair.
I heard that.
He interrupted the set by falling back.
Yeah. And who was, like, Frusciante, who was in that callback, in my callback group.
Right.
Was, like, in the scene with, I think, Mo Fathelbab at that point, mm-hmm. and was, like, did not refer to it, and got on the team.
You made it work.
Yeah, who else was my callback group? Yeah, Frusciante, Mo, Eileen Mullane, Aubrey Plaza, mm-hmm. DC Pearson. Who else? Am I missing? Who else am I missing here? How many names did I name?
Oh,
six?
You named about
me?
Five or six.
I feel like Hal maybe? Hal Phillips? Mm-hmm. So it was us.
Were those people kind of on the radar at the time?
Yeah,
like
felt, yeah.
It was like, this is a good group of people.
I think so, yeah.
So what did $12,000 come out of that?
No, what came out of that was Bastion.
So $12,000
was, I think, a year later, or maybe a few months later. But yeah, that was the
yeah, $12,000 came out of an invite, I think.
Yeah, that was Bastion. So that was kind of my, like, generation of improvisers. Mm-hmm.
Big tobacco the group.
Yeah,
like,
right.
Yeah.
So, like... Yeah, my generation would be like, Chelsea, Gardner, My Lloyd, Lydia, mm-hmm. those guys. And yeah, so I didn't get on, but then I felt good about it. Cut to a month later, I get a call. Or here's what happened. I got home from Dunkin' Donuts.
You're still working
at Dunkin' Donuts?
Oh, yeah. Way too long. And I had a prepaid cell phone, and I'd left it at home. And I was like, oh, I have a message from
a number.
Looking at it, Anthony King whatever, or UCB Theater. And it was, Anthony had left a voicemail. And I was like, I remember thinking, is this it? Is this the call?
Yeah.
But I was also kind of like.
Protecting yourself a little
bit. Yeah, protecting myself. I was like, this could be it. But if it's mm-hmm. not, I'm not going to make mm-hmm. a big deal about it. You know?
He could be asking me for someone's phone number.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, I called him back, and, yeah, he was like, do you want to, we'd like to have you join Herald Night or something like that. And I was like, oh, man, that's so awesome. Cool. So he's letting me know the information, and my phone runs out of minutes.
Ooh.
So it totally seemed like I'd hung up on the artistic director.
And it's out of minutes, so you can't just, like, call him back.
No, yeah, so I had to, like, I think my family was living at a house that was, like, two levels. So I had to run upstairs to, like, the landline and call him back. And when I called him back, he was like, you really don't want to hear what I have to say, do you? As a joke, as, like, an icebreaker.
Oh, no.
But I was so mortified that was my, you know, story.
And was that Hornado?
That was Trux.
Trux.
Yeah, so
Trux had also been made with Bastion same time?
I think Trux was a team that was, no, it had been around for a while.
Gotcha.
I kind of had a lot of lineup changes. Like, if you go to the Herald Night wiki, like, that'll be a team that has a lot of Herald Night changes. And the people who got added were me and Sarah Burns. And mm-hmm. then the other people who were already on the team were Frusciante, Nate Smith, Bridie, Howard. Who else? Nick Ross, Bob Acevedo, and John Gutierrez. So I was already on an existing team, and I think I was replacing Sarah, and I were replacing Ben Schwartz and Amber Petty, who, like, I think Amber had moved to Creep, which was like one of the premier teams at that point, and then Ben had moved to LA to, like, write for Robot Chicken.
Right.
So I was you know, put on an existing team and
replacing some good people.
Yeah, replacing some really good people. And, yeah, so that was my first Herald team. So a month after Bastion was made, I got put on a team.
Do you remember that time? Is there like standout shows? Were you having fun right away?
It was super fun. That was like such a fun group to be with. Like, because we did a lot of really fun and weird physical shows. And a lot of like, we started to do a lot of like fun thematic shows that kind of.
Right. You did the Showtime at the Apollo show?
Oh, yeah. We did a Showtime at the Apollo show.
Oh, that sounds fun.
So this show, I think we're doing like, I feel like we were the first Herald team to do a flocking opening that I could remember. And I actually remember seeing like, I teched a lot of indie shows back then. And I teched the Bombardo show, and there was an indie group that was doing a flocking opening, and I was like, "That's Truck's opening.
They're doing it because they're seeing us do it."
We did that opening, but it kind of became this organic thing where something happened, and I came out as like Sandman, Sims, the guy who like pulls the people out,
the clown that comes out when the alarm goes off at the Apollo.
And then Nate Smith made a move to just support it, and then it became like every scene was an act at the Apollo. And in the third beats, the audience voted like to see who the winner
That's
was.
Very fun.
Yeah, it was very fun.
So first,
it would
team
be like
was
that
like,
type of
It felt like, well, it's one of those things where you get on a team with a bunch of people that are already doing it. You can be a little bit like nervous, but like they kind of cover you a bit.
Yeah.
In times where like maybe you all get put on a new team and then everyone's nervous and it's hard to make work sometimes.
Yeah, it was fun. It was a very fun team. It was also like at the same time, that team existed with like Fwand and like 1985.
So it was a good time.
It was a good time for Harold and I. I think Creep was also going strong at that point, but we weren't like the number one team at the theater, but it was like just fun to perform with those guys.
That's interesting. Yeah, it sounds like that was a fucking great time to be seeing shows.
Yeah.
I came right after. I showed up, I think it was your next team. So how long were you on Trucks? Was that?
That was about a year.
A year. And then next team was Hornado.
Yeah, that was 2008.
That's when I showed up. So that was the first team I saw you on.
Mm-hmm.
And that wasn't super long, was it?
I think it was about a year, maybe. Yeah, it was about a year.
Was that standard? Most teams got a year at that time?
Yeah. I mean, I think for the level our team was at.
Music is playing.
Yeah.
Music is playing.
Cereal?
Yeah.
It's okay. We'll pick it up right here.
So that was about a year.
That was about a year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That
was another good team that was just like good people.
Yeah.
I think it was less successful than Trucks just because it was like.
Because of your name. But
yeah. Mm-hmm. Which I suggested as a joke. And then everybody.
It was like, yes, let's do it.
Yeah. Like,
see,
I suggested
never submit joke names, guys.
I suggested it as a joke. And this was also like never a good sign for a team. Like we had spent at least a week. Like
on names,
that's not a good sign. And we were getting a little bit snippy with each other, you know. And like, I loved all the people on that team, but when I was just like, what about Hornado as a joke? And I think Aubrey, who's on the team, was like, yeah, I like that.
and
then Violet Crumbine's like, yeah, what does that mean?
That
like, I like that. And then people start,
weird team.
Yeah,
what
weird.
A weird
yeah.
team,
yeah. Not the weirdest team I've been on, but yes, that was
no,
a great team.
No, because the weirdest team is one round away.
Yeah, yeah.
What was right after that?
Penthouse Riot, right?
Penthouse Riot. Yeah.
Wow.
Which was, I think Delaney would call it the Box of Frogs team.
Oh, interesting.
Have you heard Box of Frogs?
No, I've never
heard Box of Frogs. You can explain it.
Well, so when now that I'm like, I have been part of like making the teams.
Right.
Delaney calls any team that is like a hodgepodge group of improvisers, the Box of Frogs.
Oh, interesting.
And it's it's not like pejorative necessarily, because like there have been a lot of great teams that are
Box
of Frogs teams. But it's just one of those things where it's like big risk, high reward type teams, you know?
That's interesting. I've never heard that before.
Yeah.
So yeah, you guys felt like you were that at the time.
Hornado?
Yeah,
I don't
Penthouse
think Hornado.
Riot,
Penthouse Riot, yeah, for
but
sure.
You know what's interesting is like even remembering Penthouse Riot, it's like at the time, I guess as a student, I don't remember it being like bad. I remember seeing good Penthouse Riot shows.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, they weren't the best at the time, but they weren't bad.
But that was Year of 10 Teams, right?
What's up?
Was that Year of 10 Teams?
I think
Penthouse
so.
Penthouse Riot?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
So they probably had a little show.
Yeah.
There.
And Penthouse Riot and The Bishop, I think, were cut like a month before auditions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we got an email.
Yeah.
Late at night. I remember waking up, looking at my phone. No. Was I looking at my phone? No, I wasn't. I don't think I had a smartphone at that time.
Like, I was checking Twitter. Then.
But yeah, I checked my email in the morning and I was like, oh, Penrose Riot got cut. And just kind of being like, that makes sense. You know? Because we had also done a show, and it was not a good show. And Violet was not feeling well and literally went backstage and threw up.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
I've never heard that.
On our last show.
Wow, that's a pretty crazy
that's
omen.
That's a bad omen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, it was just like one of those things where it's
I mean, you knew auditions were coming up, so in your head you're like, well, we're probably going to get broken up. So to get the email a month early is like, all right.
Yeah. Yeah, it was...
were you cut? Did you get cut then?
Yeah, two teams got completely cut.
So no one got put back on.
Patton did. Josh Patton was the sole survivor.
He had just gotten on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
He had just gotten on.
He replaced.
And then, yeah, I wasn't on a team for months after that.
Interesting. What was that like?
After?
I forget you were cut. Honestly.
Yeah, I was...
and you got put back on which team?
Standard Oil.
Oh.
So the way it worked was, so we got this email, and I was like, oh, that sucks. But, you know, it's like the auditions are coming up in a month. I emailed Anthony. He's like, you'll be in the mix. And then didn't get put on. And I was like, oh, shit, what do I have to do? At that point, you kind of just, like, start evaluating what you want to get out of this.
Yeah, totally.
And to me, that's when, you know, this was what, 2009, maybe 2010? To me, that's when I started to, like, not look into writing, but just, like, be like, you know, there's more to UCB or comedy than just
this. So to answer your question from earlier, Nicole, I guess it was when he got cut.
A little bit.
To figure out what his career
was.
Because at that point, you'd been at UCB for almost your entire adult life, four to 5 years, and it was also, you didn't work there at that point, did you?
No, I did.
You did work there.
I got hired... Well, I was an intern starting 2006, and then I got hired to work at the front desk March of 2008, or May of 2008.
What is that like to, and I think sometimes a lot of us who've been around a long time
I've been teaching.
And you were teaching
Teaching, yeah.
So what is that like to be like, okay, I need to reevaluate, but also like in some ways you are very much attached to, so you can kind of only evaluate within like sort of a narrow, you're either only evaluating within like a very narrow sphere, or you're thinking about like blowing up your entire life as you know it and walking away.
That's something I was, not even just during that time, that's something I was constantly thinking about while I worked for UCB, was like, because, you know, not to get too Planet Money on this podcast, but like, people tell you like to diversify your portfolio.
Yeah. Totally.
And mine was
completely
opposite.
Yeah.
You know, like I didn't really perform at other, I mean, I'd taken classes at like Magnet and I, you know, I'd perform at other theaters, but I would, UCB is my home base. So like everything I did there, everything, including my work and like my paycheck, I did at UCB. So, that's when I kind of started to think like, what's outside UCB, and not necessarily like be like, oh fuck this place, but just, you know, just start thinking about it philosophically and try to think of it in a big picture sense. But it's hard because it's like, for me especially, it was hard to compartmentalize like your work, your career that you want to get outside of UCB, the stuff that you're just doing for fun. It's hard to do that because it's like it's all contained in one thing. So to me, my instinct is always to, what's the goal? What do I want to get out of it? Answer that question and then just start working towards that. And I feel like every time I've done that, it's come, like literally every time I've like, I'll give you a couple
so
examples.
It's so simple when you say it, but it really is the best way.
I'll give you a couple examples. One is just being on a house team. Like, all right, what do I need to do to be on a house team? Let me ask teachers for advice. Let me get in front of the people who make these decisions. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go and do that.
You did everything in your power to put yourself in that position.
Yeah. What do I need to do to be a teacher? Let me coach a ton and, you know, get recommended by people, stay in people's radar, that type of stuff.
I will say, Will Hines said one of the highest recommended teachers of all time was Achilles.
Cool.
So he went out and did it for real. I remember at that time when you started coaching, we had you as a coach.
Yes, your 401 class.
Yeah.
You and Laura and Nick Mandela.
Yeah. And you were really good back then. And it was like kind of a no-brainer that you became a teacher, but it was so clearly your goal at the time.
Yeah. I, when I got cut, I was like, well, what is my goal now, now that that's been not taken away, but like now that's over. So I had to kind of like answer the question like, well, if I never get on the team again, is that okay? If I am just a teacher, is that okay? And I think I kind of like at a certain point I was like, you know what? Let me be zen about this. Like what'll happen will happen, but I will work towards trying to get on a team again. So like I was still, you know, even when I was on my previous teams, I was still taking classes, maybe not as often as I was when I was like starting, but I got back and started taking a bunch of classes. I took Shannon's 12-week class.
I remember when you took that.
I think I took Will's. I also took Will's 12-week class before Shannon's class. And those were super fun.
Had you gotten any specific feedback on why you weren't back on or what you could work on? Or was it just one of those, like, there's not room?
Yeah. I think it was a little bit of that. And it was also like, did I ask Anthony? I feel like I asked Anthony. Maybe. I don't remember any specifics. But what I do remember was, like, asking just Will for advice. Like, you know, like, oh, what do you recommend? What should I do? And it was like hard to hear at the time, but it was also like, I just got to get better, you know? But one of the things Will said was like, yeah, you just like, you need to get better. You need to like take classes again and kick ass in those classes. And then I think the important thing he said was like, you need people to be pulling for you. And like in this round, nobody was pulling for you. Like just the, like, that's like, hard thing to hear at the time.
Especially if it is so true, though.
Yeah. And, you know, you guys have been in that room. It could be like, because you're looking at pictures on a table.
Right.
Yeah. And if that person doesn't, you know, push for you, you're kind of like, well, that's it, you know?
You could get lost in the shuffle. Yeah. For sure.
I don't know if this is too much of how the sausage gets made, but I think it's also worth it for people to know, like, it's people pulling for you, but it's also like humans pulling for you.
Mm-hmm.
So if I've been in the room for like 3 hours, even if I really like someone, if I just don't have it in me to fight anymore,
exactly.
It might not happen.
Like
how much do you like that person?
Yeah.
God, that's so fucking stressful because that probably is like a big thing that it comes down to and it's almost impossible to control.
Yeah. Yeah. And when I heard that, I was like, okay, yeah, I get that. Let me try to look for, because that's always a thing I'm looking to do is like, how can I just like get better at something? So let me go back to taking classes. Let me see what I can do. And also just the practical stuff of like, you know, I know these teachers are the people who are good. Yeah, get in front of these people.
Yeah.
Stay in their radar. Be practical about it.
I do want to say something. I think like there are things that you can do that help your chances. But I also think that, like, if you're not going to enjoy doing those things, you can't just do them to help your chances.
That's true. That's 100% true. And the thing about me going back and taking classes was, like, I totally had so much fun in those classes. It wasn't like, oh, I got to impress Will. I got to impress Shannon. It's like, no, like, those were some of the most fun classes I've ever taken, you know? Yeah.
So how long before you got put back on?
It was almost a year, I'd say. I'm not sure exactly how long it was, but I was, you know, teaching all of that time. I was coaching a bunch of teams.
Did you re-audition?
No, I never had to re-audition.
So you got that second phone call out of nowhere.
Yeah, I never had to re-audition. When they did the following year's audition, Anthony was got me on a team, or put me on a team. Yeah, I got a second phone call that went okay. It didn't. I didn't hang up.
At that point, you had a phone with a longer amount of.
Yeah.
And you were on Standard Oil for not very long. You got moved to.
Not super long. No.
Badman.
Yeah. So it was like Standard Oil for a few months. And then I got moved to Badman, which quickly became Airwolf. So I was never technically on Badman. It was like, you got moved to Badman.
They're changing their name.
Yeah, changed. Yeah, like that was the thing that Anthony said in that phone call. Was like, so this is, a different phone call now that I'm talking about.
Got a lot of phone calls from
Anthony. Got a lot of phone calls.
So then the rest is history from there. The Airwolf illustrious team becomes a weekend team.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Achilles continues to become, you know, more and more ingrained as a teacher and as a performer.
What a history lesson.
It's a tough one. I want to skip ahead just a little bit.
Sure.
Because I would be remiss not to talk to you about improv itself. Like, I feel like we can maybe skip some of the artistic director stuff.
Sure.
I don't know how much questions I have about that.
Whatever you guys want to do.
What I always thought was impressive was when I started coaching, and I probably started coaching before I should have been.
I think that's true of most people.
Yeah, most, mm-hmm. maybe.
Mm-hmm.
But I, because you were my first coach, I would literally just go to Achilles with every single, I'd be like, I'm coaching a group that does this. What should I do? And literally every time I'd have, it was like a fully realized response of like, do this or maybe try doing this. It was like unbelievable. It was like inspiring the understanding I think you had of what you were trying to teach. I thought that was like so impressive. Mm. So we have some questions I think that are a little related to that.
Okay.
And I think a lot of them are on game. What are people might think? Would you describe Achilles as like a game machine?
Yes.
Yeah, that's like you hear that term a lot. Like it's a joking term, but you hear that term a lot.
And I don't think I thought it until I saw an Airwolf Weekend Team Herald night last year, and I was like, "Whoo, baby!"
it's impressive. I think you have a grasp on game.
Are you a robot?
I'm a robot. Eddie Dunn built me in his basement and programmed me. I think a big part of it is, I think a couple of things. One is I mostly teach 201s. Mm-hmm. That's like, I love teaching 201. I love teaching game.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny. Brandon Gardner and I, who also teaches a ton of 201s and is also a game robot, performed a two-prov set at the UCB East like a few months ago, mm-hmm. and we named our team, "We Probably Taught Your 201. And we were like, we asked the audience, has anybody here taken 201? Plenty
Everyone.
Of applause.
That's so funny.
But yes, I think that's part of it is like just, I'm constantly giving notes on games, so like I'm just internalizing everything.
I will say Dave Murray, before we walked in, said he's seen your 201 shows, and they're as good as advanced study level shows.
Wow.
And he was like not kidding. He was like, they're so good. And he wanted me to ask you about that. And like, what is it? I mean, I need to know. Teach me.
I think, and this isn't just a 201 philosophy. I think my general philosophy in coaching and teaching is keep things practical.
Yes.
That's my big thing is like, I don't like giving notes that I'll give them, you know, if it's appropriate. But I don't like giving notes that are too kind of like flowery
all right, the scene is water and you want to make sure that it ripples.
Yeah, and so I like those types of notes. Like I
do too, but I can't apply them.
Yeah. So to me, a more I think helpful approach for me communicating to students is like, well, this happened, so mm-hmm. now you have to do this thing, you know? Or I've seen that thing a million times. Here's how to either keep doing that or, you know, get out of it instead of like just having these, I don't know exactly
concepts,
what you...
Concepts, like bigger concepts.
Or aphorisms or something like that.
That's so interesting.
Yeah.
I teach a metaphor and I love receiving metaphor.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
But I wonder if it's ever actually helped or if it's just like been like brain candy. I wonder if it's ever made it easier or better to improvise or
I think it's definitely fun. I think it's definitely needed.
Yeah.
Like, right. Everyone needs a good healthy dose of that.
Right.
And I think, but I think you also need a healthy dose of practicality.
Yeah.
And the thing about practicality is... And the difference is you can be a little bit of a snake oil salesman with the like metaphor.
Yeah, you can.
But when it comes down to being practical, it's either it works right now or it doesn't work or it makes sense right now and it doesn't. And I'll say the first person I realized that was really good at that was Porter Mason.
Yeah.
Mm. He gave very practical notes that really stayed with. They were like different.
And he also taught a lot of 201s.
He taught probably because I think, that's very interesting. That's so you think when you describe game, you're saying like, this is what game is. These are, you know, you're not kind of.
Yeah, here are the steps to get to that. And hopefully those are things that are practical, doable, and easy to kind of not just hear over and over again, but like develop as a skill.
Do you have any like practical tips for playing game?
It's hard to say what the situation. I'll give you an example of just like just a general note that I think is people say a lot, and I think is a good note, but I don't think is ultimately super helpful. Like,
got it.
You just have more fun in the scene. Like, I don't think that's a helpful note.
I think
that's a good thing for people to hear once in a while. Like, you got to have more fun. But then to me, I'm like, well, how do I do that? How do I have fun? Maybe that's just the way my brain thinks.
Achilles, I'll give you a sports metaphor.
Oh, boy. Yeah,
and Nicole hates it.
And I'll try to translate.
But Pete Carroll.
Mm-hmm. Coach of the Seahawks.
The Seahawks. He's a notorious Seattle Seahawks. Yeah. He's a notorious college coach. And he always said, and I think even Nick Popovich, the Spurs coach.
Greg Popovich.
Says the same thing where it's like people are always like trying to have fun, but he wants his teams to have fun because they're being successful.
Mm-hmm.
So like when someone's like, how do you have more fun in the scene for Achilles? It's like, well, how do I like make the scene really good? So it's fun for me.
Yeah.
And not, oh, me having more fun is going to make the scene better.
Yeah.
So yeah, I agree with you on that 100%.
Yeah.
So yeah, not, it's not about having more fun. So
I think it's definitely not about that. In the core curriculum, because like,
oh yeah,
for sure, that's a useless note. I think like sometimes later on you can be like, I don't know, act like you like it.
It's more of a coaching note than like a class note.
Yeah, for sure.
I think that's the type of thing that I try to avoid in my 201 classes.
Yeah,
and are there any other? I mean, I just want to because you're so good at it.
I'll try to think like just practical notes. So like, I taught a straight man workshop.
Right. What was that about?
About being a good straight man in a scene. So we did straight man, crazy man scenes. And also, like, just by the context of the workshop, you also got to play the crazy man. In the straight man class, like, when we did warm-up scenes, like, some just, you know, practical notes I said were, like, don't talk over each other.
Very good one.
One thing I'll say a lot in like that workshop, but also in every 201 is like, it's not up to the unusual person to justify their thing. It's like 60% on that person and then 40% on the straight man. So like the straight man can say, this is your point of view. This is your,
or even the straight man can be like, hey man, help me understand, like justify for me in a way.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
I'll get pretty granular with scenes, meaning I'll be like,
down.
What did you just say?
Right.
Okay, you said that. How do you feel about that? How do you feel about that? Like, that's your reaction in the scene. Okay, so now we have a straight man, crazy man scene. We have a, you know, peas in the pot scene, whatever. So now we have to, like, explore the scene. Now we have to figure out what the logic of the scene is. So I think with my 201 classes especially, like, I just, I want to be able to give the people in the scene or people in the class tools that are useful in their improv scenes. Like if it's like, oh, this thing happened, I can just pull this tool out.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
Instead of thinking like, I can't even think of a big note just because I don't give it, give them, but like a note of like,
if your scene is a flower, a game is the stem
that
holds your scene together. Yeah. Which I remember loving, but it's also like, when the fuck am I ever in a scene thinking like stem?
Yeah.
Stem.
Or like there's a thing in Truth and Comedy that's like, where your character is like a straw boater. And I'm like, I have no idea what a straw boater is.
No, that's not true.
It is. It
that's
is.
Not true.
What does that even mean?
A straw boater is a hat.
Oh,
so you have to, the note was like, you have to wear your characters lightly, you know? Or you can't be like, well, my character wouldn't do that, blah, 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 you know?
Oh. It's,
I think the puppets is so much better than that.
Oh, that's
I think it's like
that's
same thing,
one.
But
yes.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Where your character's like a straw boater?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What got rejected before they were like, that's how we got to say it?
Yeah, what could it have been?
I mean, this book was also written in like the mid-90s. So.
Yeah. Oh, where your character's like their color form clothes.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Do you guys get that? With those
cars? Yeah, sure,
okay,
sure.
Yeah.
Achilles, are there things that... when you coach or give notes, do you feel like you are noting things that you are getting notes on or things that are like, for instance, my biggest note was always like walk-ons.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like when I'm coaching or that's like the biggest, I focus so much on it.
There's a
Maybe.
Easy note you can give for that.
Don't do it.
Yeah.
There's a what?
No, I know. Chess Bull doesn't like first beat walk-ons.
I don't like any walk-ons.
Oh, I completely agree with you.
Yeah. What
completely
happened in the world where first beat walk-ons are okay now?
I think people see it on Harold Knight and Lloyd Knight.
Oh, man. Ding, ding, ding.
And people are like, I like them, so I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
You know,
when
I think
about this,
I think my two rules for walk-ons are it has to be called on by the people in the scene.
Yep.
Or it has to be some sort of physical support that's not possible for the. Those are the only walk-ons that I
in first beats or ever, just in first beats or at
in
all?
First beats.
Gotcha.
In first beats. Like even in the Herald teams, I'd coach. Like I'd be like, do not walk on. I don't care if you're a Herald team.
Don't
walk on. And definitely in 201, I don't do any walk-ons. My 201 form that I do is, you know, it's like the same as most people's, but they'll walk-ons in the first beats,
right.
Walk-ons and tag-outs in the second beats. In the third beats, you do three scenes.
Oh, yeah.
I don't do any connections.
No connections, no side things, no orphans.
I just want to see three games again.
Yeah, you're never going to play them again, so play them now.
Did you ever coach a Herald team, Achilles?
Did I ever coach a Herald team? Yeah, I coached one or two Herald teams.
No, I was asking because you said you were teaching at the time that you were cut. Were you also coaching Herald teams at that time?
Oh,
as well?
When I was cut?
Yeah.
Who was I coaching? I was coaching...
Because I know you've coached a bunch of teams, but I mean, like,
early
on.
I was coaching Scooch. I was coaching Bastion.
You coached Very Good Kiss
for a
while, right?
I coached Very Good Kiss for a while. I coached Sam and Diane, Namaste.
Right.
Wow.
Yeah,
I mean, at that point, Achilles was coaching
a ton. What's your sort of approach when it comes to a new team like that? Because I will say, I think I've been on two teams.
A new team?
Or any team. I think I've been on two teams where our first rehearsal was with you.
Yeah.
And they were so good.
Mm.
I think
Musk.
Yeah, Musk was one. And then I think even like Big Revival maybe?
Maybe.
But.
Yeah, what's your recipe for a first
what's
practice?
Your recipe?
First practice, it's all about doing a lot of scenes. Mm-hmm. Like that's the most important thing. Like I keep the notes very, very minimal. Just like things to nudge the team one direction or the other.
Mm-hmm.
I try to hopefully get the team to know each other a little bit in either the warm-ups or just by doing a ton of scenes or the types of exercises that we do. But yeah, that's the main thing. Do a lot of scenes. Yeah. And I don't think it's super important to do a Herald in that first rehearsals as a team. It's just about do a lot of scenes.
When you say getting to know each other, are you at all concerned with bonding them while they're in the room or no?
Bonding by
like them, like making them start to feel like a unit.
At least at the very beginning, I just want people on the team to know personal things about each other, and I do warm-ups and exercises that are hopefully help that in some way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I won't do like a straight just like exercise. I mean, I will, but like the ones that I'll pick are the ones that are like. Oh, you get to know a little bit about somebody.
Do a little monologue or whatever, yeah.
Do you like your neighbor?
Mm-hmm.
Nobody plays that. I'm the only one who does that warm-up. The only teacher doing that.
Peter Grill played that warm-up, so.
What I liked about those rehearsals at the time was it kind of didn't give us even a second to, like, start with the, like, all right, well, what's the team name going to be?
Yeah.
What, you know,
That's the other thing that I'm not really even thinking about, but I think just doing a lot of scenes and being on your feet, it's... First couple of rehearsals, it's like it's all about learning about each other, doing a lot of scenes, and like removing a couple of things. One, this like kind of veneer of politeness that happens with new teams. It's like, oh, it's a new group. I got to be in my best behavior, whatever.
So people
which is a good instinct, but maybe not super helpful sometimes when you're doing a scene. And then this other thing of like just judgment, which is. I think less of a thing for new teams, but something that can just like ruin.
If it
ruin
happens
a team.
By chance, it's a recipe for destruction.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember those as being really good rehearsals.
Yeah.
So any new team out there, find Achilles.
Yeah, find me.
Yeah, for sure.
And I think for just in general for Herald or any house team, my philosophy is like, what is not even what does the team want? It's to me, it's like, what will the team succeed in? And that's what I try to focus on. Or like, what is good for the team? Because I'm all about like, at a certain point, you just got to lean into your strengths. You know, like you can't be like, well, you know, we're bad at this. So we're going to
do this.
Well, I think there's a lot to be said for that.
Yeah.
For like giving yourself a challenge. And I think that's totally something that I've done in the teams that I've coached. But I think there's also... like, you should take pride in the things that you're yeah. good at.
And
you know?
Don't you also have to be in a slightly secure place to be able to get away with that?
That's true. Yeah.
You have to kind of, like, prove in yourself as a team before you get, I think, the goodwill to try to be good at stuff you're bad at.
Yeah.
And being successful cures all. So, like, being successful in the beginning, you might then later on be able to go do something you're not good at. But because you have that foundation of success, you guys are not splintered at the very beginning.
Yeah.
After, go.
Oh, when I was coaching, like, Bastion and, like, Sam and Diane, those guys, that, like, were so veteran that I would just, like, make them do things that it amused me,
right.
you know?
Yeah.
And,
like, right. It's kind of like a laboratory in a way. Yeah.
Yeah. And, like, those guys are just so good. Like, some of the stuff they were doing in rehearsal and in shows was, like, just awesome. Yeah.
I have a just general question. Achilles, you've been performing at UCB for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Is there, like, a single greatest improv moment? Or was there, like, a show where you're like, this was...
For me?
Comparing, yeah. Are you always, like, this one show? Because we haven't talked about, like, As the Diamond Burns.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't talked about, you know, I think you did a lot of good improv.
Yeah.
So I'm, like, wondering, what is, like, the high point for you?
For me? So not seeing improv, just, like...
Like, yeah, what show were you
stage.
In?
Yeah.
When you felt the magic.
I definitely felt good during... Airwolf's cage match run a few years ago.
That was gonna be my guess.
That was super fun.
And then that was when I first was like, Achilles is a game machine. Mm-hmm. Like when at those moments it was crazy. And this kind of leads to another question and not to, but I think it's from Dave Murray. You're a person that even in bad shows or even in crazy shows, you seem unflappable.
Mm-hmm.
Like you don't seem to be affected by the way a show is going, where a lot of improvisers are, not in a bad way, but I just think there's a poise that you have that, like, I would see on Cage Match, even in crazy shows where, like, it's going well, but it's, like, so out of control, you'd have this level of poise and precision. It's like, how are you able to do that? Is that something you concentrate on?
I think that just comes from experience. That it's a couple of things. Experience, because I definitely wasn't that way when I started. Like,
right.
Because, you know, it's so easy to be, like, on your first house team or whatever, to be performing in front of the Herald Knight audience, to be like, I have to do good improv,
right.
you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's definitely the mentality of a Herald Knight performer, is like, I have to do good improv. These are all students. I have to do something brilliant.
I have
for
to be
them.
Funny right now.
Yeah. But at a certain point, you're just like, you can't think that way. You just have to kind of be locked in with the person or the people you're in the scene with. And for me, that was like just from doing a lot of scenes, being experienced, and just trusting that, like, I don't need to do anything beyond this moment. And that's like, you know, an artsy fartsy thing to say, but, like,
I mean,
it is so
simply improv.
So important.
Yeah.
Like, that's really the thing that helped me kind of, break through as, like, a confident performer. It's like, oh, I don't need to think about XYZ 50, you know, minutes from now. I just need to think about what's going on right now. How can I, like, support the other person?
And
that's
trust yourself that in those moments to come, you'll be able to handle it just as well.
And I think the second part of it is, you know, it depends a lot on who you're performing with. Like Airwolf has a team of, like, everybody on that team has, like, a swagger, you know?
Yeah.
So, like, if I'm on stage with them, I know they're going to have fun. So, like, why am I going to worry about, you know, what I'm thinking about? Or, I know it's going to be funny no matter what, you know?
That was an incredible cage match run. You guys were doing the event day, I think?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We don't do it anymore, but we did it.
Do you feel like you're a person who, just to jump around a little bit, do you feel like you're a person that takes towards forms a lot? Because I feel like I could ask you a question about any form.
Yeah. I like forms. I do like teaching them. But, and I think this is just true of, like, having taught a lot, and, like, 201 is mostly scene work. The form doesn't matter at all. Like, the form is a thing that just exists for fun to happen. So to me, like, more and more, like, the more I do this, it's like, form is bullshit.
Wow. Like,
interesting.
The form is whatever it is. it'll be fun, you know, it'll be cool. But like the most important thing is like who's across the stage from you, like who are you doing a scene with? Like that is the most important thing. And, you know, like I'm always thinking about the form. Like yeah. I'm always thinking about like, oh, how can we make this scene? Or how can we make the show thematic? How can right. we make this? Just that's just the way I'm like wired. But I'm not thinking about like what's a cool form I can make, you know, or like right. what's a cool thing that you know I can do to like shake up the improv world, you know, like that's much less important right. to me than like what is the other person doing? How can I support that?
I do when Bucky was doing mono scene Harold's on Harold mm-hmm. Night, I would say. Yeah, in like
Dress
big old books.
Doing the quotes.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, I would say six of them were Harold's, maybe tops.
Yeah, but you felt good about them.
Yes, and I realized at the very end, I was like, oh, that's because at some point in time we were honoring each other more than the form. And yeah. I think if we had been like, I know Nate thinks we're supposed to do a group game, but it's time for second beat, so I'm going to force this to be a second beat. Mm-hmm. The sets would have been less good. They yeah. might have been like actually accomplishing the form.
Yeah,
but we would have hated each other.
Mm-hmm.
And it took me a long time to realize that.
I think one Gethard note that's super helpful was like, it was about editing, but mm-hmm. I think it really speaks to support is like, you guys should be editing at the peak of your scenes because if you don't edit, like the scene can't yell at you at the end of the show, but your scene partner can, or like the people on stage can, like. They can't be like the scene can't be mad at you,
oh.
you know. So if you're just doing something to like fulfill
support your scene
to support the scene, that's not helpful. But if you're doing something that is supportive of the people in the scene, then that is.
We've
helpful.
Said
oh,
that.
So
we've said
smart.
That many ways in reference to Gethard's notes.
Yeah,
just like support the player, not the scene.
Yeah,
yeah.
I think
so
that's
great.
Like that.
That's a super practical note too,
and it's also like a fundamental note that goes, you know. To the beginning of
Absolutely.
Improv, it's like that's a Del Close note. It's
and
like save the, you know, screw the scene, save yeah. your scene partner.
And it's also yeah. super important to hear from someone that we consider a game machine,
mm-hmm.
because a lot of times when people start really focusing on game is when that kind of forgetting about their scene partner starts to happen, because
yeah.
you're making up a lot of stuff.
Although
in your
I'd
head.
Like to say something about game.
Yes, please.
It's bullshit. No, no. I think it's it's obviously the thing. I love. Teaching and like playing towards the game,
mm-hmm.
but one thing that I heard in a Peter Gwynn class was he was like, game is super simple. It's one person does something, and then the other person reacts off that thing. That's it. That's like all you need to know about game. It's like I do something that makes you do something. That's it. You know, so you can break that down in as many ways as possible. Straight man, crazy man,
yeah,
peas
yeah,
in the pod.
Yeah.
You know, like. You're crazy, and that makes
right.
me mad. You know, like that's really what game is. That's a good descriptor of like what it should be.
Because without that, you don't have game. Without someone
yeah.
reacting to what you're doing, you basically don't have game.
Yeah,
that's a really, really great.
And it's note. Also just like a way to kind of help demystify what the game is. You know.
Well, I think I've learned something here today.
I definitely have.
Yeah, that's fascinating because, yeah, like I said, game machine, Achilles.
Is that it? Are we wrapping up?
I think we're wrapping it up.
To.
My mind is blown.
But this is so good. I could do this forever.
We should do
this again.
Yes, we should definitely do it
again.
I'm
down.
We'll talk just about Invocation. thank you so much for doing this, Achilles. Ultra successful, amazing improviser. Guys, this is someone we should be all looking up to. If you have questions about coaching, you could probably just G-chat him and he'll give you exercises verbatim.
Yeah, G-chat me.
Yeah, G-chat him. thank you for listening.
Bye.
You've been listening to the UCB Longform Conversation podcast. If you haven't already subscribed, go ahead and do that. And you can also go to iTunes and leave a rating or review. That would really help us out. In the future, if you want to ask us questions or ask questions to our guests, you can follow us on Twitter at UCB Convo and look for postings there on future guests and future activity. Guys, I'm feeding the nerds left and right. We'll see you next week.